it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hall of Fame coaches, national champions, lottery picks, the best minds in basketball. Welcome into the Sidelines with Evan Daniels.
What's up, college basketball fans? Welcome back to the Sidelines podcast. I'm your host, Evan Daniels, college basketball insider at FS1, as well as the director of basketball recruiting at 24/7 Sports. The season came to an end last night, and Virginia is your national champion. We're going to get to the story about the Virginia Cavaliers. We're going to talk about the coaching searches. Before we get to both of those things, I want to make sure that you are subscribed and supporting the Sidelines podcast. The best way to do that is to go over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. I'm also asking that you leave a 5-star rating if you think that's what we deserve, and a review. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter or Instagram. The handle is at Evan Daniels. Would love to know what you think about the podcast.
It's time to go Minute with Evan Daniels. Send it in, big fella.
Now I'm going to bring back on my colleague from FS1, Conrad Company. We've been discussing basketball throughout the season, and no better way to cap things off and talk about the national championship last night. Virginia is your national champion, and what a story, Conrad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, could you ask for a better national championship game? I mean, I know a lot of people were worried there was going to be too much defense. But man, that was probably one of the best national championship games or even Final Fours that I can remember over the past 5-10 years.
Yeah, the Final Four games and the Elite Eight games were all tremendous. I think the Elite Eight games were, you know, as good of basketball games that I've ever seen. But the championship game last night, I thought, turned out to be a doozy. I know people were worried about it being not visually appealing and too much defense. And once you got past the first 4 minutes of the game, it was awesome. There was shot making. Virginia made 11 threes. DeAndre Hunter down the stretch was awesome. He was particularly really good in the second half. Scored 27 points, hit 4 of 5 three-pointers. This is a kid that we've all been waiting for to come on in the NCAA tournament, and he picked just the right time to do that.
Yeah, certainly, you know, and I mean, we got the show that I think a lot of us wanted down the stretch with Culver playing Hunter and vice versa, where they matched up on both offense, defense, where you got to see legitimately the two guys that are probably going to be the two highest picked players in the draft in that game going head to head. You know, I mean, Culver didn't have a great night, 5 for 22. He's actually had an awful shooting performance in the NCAA tournament. Do you think that's actually going to affect his draft stock?
Maybe a little, but I don't think too much. At the end of the day, he's a 6'6" long wing with athleticism, scoring ability, and can defend. He obviously didn't have a great championship game, was 5 of 22 from the field, but did have 15, 9, and 5. And I still think he's one of the better NBA prospects in this draft. And you and I have gone over this a bunch, but it's a down draft class. So I still see him in the top 10 pick range.
Yeah, well, how do you feel about DeAndre Hunter after his performance? I mean, he had a career high in points last night, and you know what? It seemed like in the final 10 minutes of the game, that guy didn't miss a shot.
Yeah, he was particularly awesome coming down the stretch, and this is a guy that really hasn't performed up to his level during the NCAA tournament, and Virginia needed him. And he's got size, he's got length, he's got athletic ability. He's able to switch out on the perimeter and guard multiple positions. He showed his ability to step out on the floor and make jump shots, which I think is particularly key. You know, in the NBA, he can fill a role as a 3-and-D guy, but he showed He showed all of his ability there in the second half, and it was cool to see him step up in that type of moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was big shot after big shot down the stretch last night. I mean, it was the perfect cap off to a 2019 season. The only thing about it, though, and I don't know how you feel about it, do you feel like there's too many replays at the end of games where, I mean, there was the call where it was off of his pinky, touched his pinky a little bit off Texas Tech to end the game? How do you feel about those calls? I mean, the rest of college basketball before there was the replay system, that would have been Texas Tech ball.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I, you know, I think it's twofold, man. It's hard because you want the play to be called correctly. and that's the most fair way to do it. But at the same time, you don't want the speed of the game to slow down so much where we're constantly looking at replays, constantly going to commercial breaks. That stuff can wear you down a little, honestly, and we all want a fast-paced, quickly moving game, and when you have 3-4 minute breaks every now and then for replays, it can be frustrating. But I think the key is that they get the play right. Now, I think one area that's maybe frustrating for me is when they, there's certain things they can and can't review. And I saw some replays this morning about the particular play that you're talking about with the ball going off a pinky. Well, Kyle Guy slapped at his wrist, and the reason he was losing the ball was because he was blatantly fouled. And I'm sure they could see that when they went back to the replay, but they can't adjust or make that call. So it ends up going off of David Moretti, and Virginia gets the ball. So to answer your question, it's frustrating, but I also think there's some need for it because you want to get calls right.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think you're 100% correct. You always want the right call to be made, and it was the right call in that situation. Obviously, you can't review the foul, but, some people never get over those calls, but you just got to move on. You got to continue to keep playing the game. But again, major props to Virginia on winning. Now, this Virginia team is pretty loaded. Now, technically, next year, they only lose Jack Salt as far as being a senior. It's pretty crazy to think that Tony Bennett and this Virginia team can say, hey, guys, if y'all want to run this back, we can try to run this back, and we can be like those Florida Gators in the mid-2000s. Who do you think is leaving this team, and who do you think will be returning next year?
Well, I think DeAndre Hunter's certainly gone, and that's going to be a big loss. I think just from their tournament performance last year to this year, pretty easy to see. And what a comeback story. We didn't really get a chance to touch on that, but I think it's one of the coolest stories to have happened in sports, losing to a 16 seed last year, being the first number one seed to do so, and then bouncing back for a national championship. It's pretty historic and pretty epic. But yeah, I think they'll lose DeAndre Hunter. I think there's a chance that they could lose Ty Jerome. You never know with Kyle Guy. He is a junior. You would expect he's probably back, and maybe even Ty Jerome, but I think they have decisions to make. Mamadi Diakite is a junior, so he'll be back. Jay Huff will be back. There's a lot to play out here. It's way too early to talk about them being back-to-back champs, in my opinion, because the loss of DeAndre Hunter alone is a big deal.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't bring up beating the one seed from last year with Virginia because you know why? Winning heals all wounds, and I don't think Virginia is going to look back on that loss at all anymore after they're putting this up in the banners. But yeah, so again, congratulations, Virginia. It was a fantastic season. Now, Chris Beard, though, and his Texas Tech team, they lost a ton last year. They came back super resilient this year, probably one of the best defensive teams, if not the best defensive team in the country. They play a very positionless type of basketball, like kind of like the Warriors do, and I know a lot of other teams are trying to adapt the style. Do you see more of the NCAA kind of turning more to positionless basketball?
Well, I think it's something that we've seen over the course of the past 8 years, something that's consistently gone that route. Coaches are targeting guys that are versatile and can guard multiple positions and play multiple positions on offense. I think versatility is so key in the current day and game of college basketball and NBA, and it's certainly something that I think college coaches are zeroing in on and trying to recruit to. And obviously Texas Tech provides a good example, but it's something that John Calipari, Kentucky's been doing for quite some time as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure Chris Beard's going to get a raise, and I'm sure Texas Tech fans are going to be happy to have him sitting in Lubbock for the next foreseeable future, I'm sure. But let's move on to this Rick Barnes to UCLA news. Now, obviously, he's staying at Tennessee. You were at the airport when you dropped this story. How did all this play out?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy how it developed. I mean, when I heard Rick Barnes' name involved in UCLA, one, I was taken back a little. Two, I was walking through an airport or in a Uber writing the story. And at that time, it was Sunday evening. And at that time, I thought that deal with Rick Barnes and UCLA was nearly done. And I think if you ask both sides about it at that time, they'd likely say the same exact thing. But he met with Philip Fulmer Sunday evening, and then they talked on Monday. Tennessee presented him with a different offer or another offer, and really his decision to stay at Tennessee was twofold, Conrad. It was one, there was a late negotiation snag with UCLA that I think impacted some things, and two, Tennessee certainly stepped up, and Rick Barnes has been public with the idea that he needs more money for his staff, and and needs more money devoted to basketball, and it sure seems like Tennessee stepped up when they needed to. And now UCLA has filled their coaching search, Conrad, really while we were recording this podcast.
Mick Cronin leaving Cincinnati after a long tenure there to head to UCLA. How do you think that's going to play out?
6 years, $24 million for Mick Cronin. Woo. I think what's interesting is he was one of the guys that UCLA had interviewed in the initial go around, and this is a guy that's won every step of the way. He's started out as a high school assistant coach. Was an assistant coach at both Cincinnati and Louisville, and then a head coach at Murray State, Cincinnati, and UCLA. Has won 365 games in his career. I think he's a good basketball coach. He's a guy that has always coached tough physical teams, known for their defensive prowess. But this is going to be the first time that he's headed to the West Coast. And so hiring a staff that knows that area is quite important.
How does this affect recruiting for a situation like UCLA, where recruits and their parents possibly look at UCLA not getting their first guy, their second guy, their third guy, and then they have Mick Cronin now, which I think Mick Cronin is a fantastic coach, but it's pretty clear on the record that UCLA has tried to be in negotiations with quite a few big dogs before they got to Mick. Does this affect their recruiting in any way, do you believe?
No, I don't think it'll affect their recruiting. I mean, I think now it's moving forward with the guy they hired. I mean, did they run somewhat of an embarrassing search at different times? I think you could make that case. Do I think Mick Cronin is a good basketball coach? Yes. Do I think that this process in terms of hiring him will hinder them with recruits? No. I think the most important thing for Mick is to hire the right staff, be able to go to UCLA and zero in on guys that can fit his program and fit who he is and go from there.
Yeah. Now, is there anybody you think that'll be filling the role of new head coach at Cincinnati?
Yeah, the name I would probably point to and jumps off the page the quickest is Northern Kentucky's John Brannan. He's done a tremendous job there in such a brief time. He's taken them to two NCAA tournaments. He did usher them into the Division I-A era. So he's done a great job at Northern Kentucky, and I would imagine he gets a strong and serious look from Cincinnati. It's just across the river. He grew up in Alexandria, Kentucky. He's from the area. I would guess that he gets a really strong look.
Well, hopefully Cincinnati will have their guys soon enough. I mean, it sounds like obviously UCLA got theirs. Let's move on to another coach who sounds like he's stepping down. I don't know. Is it official yet? Chris Mullin's leaving St. John's?
It's not official, but that is the word. And they've already lost recruits, and it's expected to happen here in the near future. Sources have told me that the guy that the St. John's AD is targeting is Arizona State head coach Bobby Hurley. There's obviously some ties. The AD at St. John's came from Duke. Obviously, Bobby Hurley, one of the more accomplished players to play at Duke. So it appears that they're going to be targeting Arizona State's head coach Bob Hurley.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's unfortunate because, as everyone knows, Chris Mullins was the best player that St. John's has ever produced. But over his first three seasons, 38-60, he was unable to get 500 over the mark. And then this past season, they went 21-14, but they did lose five of their last six before they got beat by Bobby Hurley and the Arizona Sun Devils. Why do you think Chris Mullins is stepping down now as head coach?
Well, the truth is, I think that there's going to be I guess the best way to put it is a drop-off in the program. Shamori Pons left. He wasn't coming back. Matt Abdelmassi, the guy that has basically been in charge of recruiting a majority, if not all, of their talent, left to join Fred Hoiberg at Nebraska. I think they obviously made an NCAA tournament this year. I think next year could have been tough. And I think it was a scenario where the athletic director kind of saw the writing on the wall and made a decision to part ways a year prior than he was probably going to be forced to. Because I think if you're looking at next year and who they have currently on their roster and the way things were going, I don't think that they would have had a great season. So it seems like he may have saved himself some pain and gone ahead and parted ways.
And again, you're hearing that Bobby Hurley would be the front runner to take over that St. John's program.
Yeah, that's exactly who the AD at St. John's is targeting, is Bobby Hurley.
Okay. Now, let's move on to actually Eric Musselman, another guy who left a position at Nevada to head to Arkansas. Now, in my opinion, it makes sense for Eric Musselman to leave because they are losing six of their top eight performers from this past season. What have you heard about his transition to Arkansas?
Well, that happened pretty quickly, and we know that Arkansas talked to a couple guys, and I think Musselman was one of the first they actually interviewed, and this is a guy that's had a lot of success in Nevada. He flipped them very quickly. The season before he arrived, they only won 9 games. Each of the last 3 seasons, Eric Musselman and Nevada have won 28 games once and 29 games twice. He went to a Sweet 16 a year ago. He started out the season in the top 10. This is a guy with NBA pedigree. He's coached for 3 years in the NBA. He's got ties to the area, not quite Arkansas, but coached at LSU in the 2014-2015 season. So this is a guy that can really coach. This is a guy that knows how to motivate his players. He's done quite a bit at Nevada with transfers, and I would expect that he'll continue to mine that market.
Now, one quick question off the topic. There is the discussion of them taking away grad transfers going forward. How do you feel about that, and how is that going to affect players leaving their schools to go have opportunities other places?
There's certainly been some talk of that, how that's going to transpire. I don't think we quite know yet, Conrad. It's obviously been helpful to some programs, and I would also argue that it's been a little bit overrated for others. There's very few grad transfers that have had the impact that a guy like Matt Mooney had at Texas Tech this year. You could name off a couple that had big impacts, but overall, I would say, you know, some of those guys are stopgaps. But I don't know that we've seen quite the success that some think they have in that transition. But as of now, I think we're stuck with grad transfers. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing either.
You
feel bad for the low and mid majors that are losing guys right and left because of the rule. So I think it's twofold.
Yeah. Now let's get back on track real quick with Eric Musselman going to Arkansas. Does the SEC have the best coaching trees in college basketball right now?
Man, it's a pretty darn good one. I mean, it'd be tough to compete with the ACC of Roy Williams and Coach K and Jim Boeheim and Leonard Hamilton. You could go down the list. There's some really good coaches. And Chris Mack is a tremendous basketball coach. There's a long list of really good coaches. I think Jeff Capel is going to be really good at Pittsburgh. There's a really good list of coaches in the ACC. I'm sure I'm leaving some out, but the SEC has done a good job of compiling very good basketball coaches. And, you know, you've obviously got John Calipari at Kentucky. I think Eric Musselman was a very good hire at Arkansas. I think they continue to add, because I think Buzz Williams was a very good hire at Texas A&M. I don't know that I would say it's the best coaching group, but I think they certainly have a really good one. And I think basketball in the SEC is continuing to rise and get better.
Yeah, you know, and that's something that I've kind of noticed over the past couple years. Growing up, I didn't watch a ton of SEC basketball, but over the past, like I said, 3, 4, 5 years, I started to watch more. I don't think there is any better atmosphere than those SEC games when they're rival games. I mean, and looking at the coaches right now, I mean, with Musselman going to Arkansas, Bruce Pearl taking Auburn to a Final Four, I think Mike White's a terrific coach at Florida, Tom Crean at that, I mean, going into his second, third year into the Bulldogs, Calipari. We don't know if Will Wade's going to come back to LSU. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, Frank Martin, even at South Carolina, there's so many quality, good coaches. And actually, another one that I just noticed too, totally forgot to bring it up, Jerry Stackhouse going to Vanderbilt. What's all that about?
Yeah, you're right. It is a long list of impressive coaches. I actually think that Bruce Pearl is a little undervalued as a basketball coach, and what they were able to accomplish in terms of getting a Final Four this year and winning some games, especially a big one against Kentucky without their best player, was ridiculously impressive. He's got good guards, and they're fun to watch. In terms of Jerry Stackhouse, I think it's an intriguing hire and one that I'm watching pretty closely. This is a guy, by all accounts, is a good basketball mind. And, you know, I have a friend that worked pretty closely with him during his career, and he thinks that he's a really good basketball coach. Now, the challenge for a guy like him is he's headed to college basketball. And he's never had to recruit college basketball players. Now, he has some ties to the grassroots level. He has an AAU program and has for quite some time. So there's some ties to that arena. But I think it's going to be important that he hires a staff that knows and has the ability to recruit. And at Vanderbilt, it's different. You've got to be able to zone in on and recruit with an academic model. And I think that's not always the easiest thing in the world.
No, I would agree with that. Now, I mean, and I know we keep seeing a trend of these former NBA players coming back to college basketball. Now, obviously, we had Penny Hardaway go to Memphis last year. Now, Jerry Stackhouse. I mean, just recognizable names. Do you think this is going to become more of a trend where guys are going to leave the NBA and say, you know what, I'm going to give this coaching thing a try?
Well, we've seen it quite a few times. I don't know that it's going to trend upward or downward. I think most of these athletic directors are attempting to find the best basketball coach they can. Jerry Stackhouse obviously was unique, and he had a relationship with the AD that dates back to the G League. Malcolm Turner was once in charge of the G League before he got to Vanderbilt. So I think there was a strong connection there that particularly helped this one.
Now, the last thing that I want to talk to you about is this guy, Trey Jones, coming back to Duke this season. Is there anything you're hearing on why he would return? I mean, in most mock drafts, he's a top 20 pick. Usually, if you're a top 20 pick, you're out. You're gone.
Well, I think the part of it with Trey is he had an up and down close to his freshman season. And this is a guy that I thought showed really some significant mental toughness with the way he bounced back from that game against UCF, where UCF was basically daring him to shoot and mocking him to shoot. And then he comes back the next game and hits a handful of three-pointers. And I thought that showed some ridiculous confidence and mental toughness. But I think Trey is a really good point guard. I think this is a kid that really knows how to distribute and pass, and he's a tremendous on-ball defender. The next area here is to improve as a shot maker and as a shooter. And the truth is, Conrad, this is a shooter's game, and you have to be able to make shots in the NBA. There's not a lot of point guards in the NBA that can't knock down a three-pointer. And I'm not saying he's incapable, but I think it's an area that he's going to really have to improve on. He's actually a pretty good mid-range shooter. I thought it was a mature decision, honestly. I think another year at Duke could be extremely helpful for Trey Jones, and I think it could really help his development.
I know we talked a little bit off-air about it, but do you think there is any possibility that obviously having his brother Tyus, who was a national championship winner at Duke, who left after his freshman year and kind of not in and out of the league, but he's been with the Timberwolves, but he hasn't been really getting a ton of playing time over his 3-4 years there. Do you think that had anything to go into it, where he talked to his brother and his brother's like, hey man, just keep learning under Coach K and keep getting better?
Well, it's pretty clear that those two are close, and I'm sure they've talked a great deal, and I'm sure that Tyus has given him some pretty handy advice. I haven't spoken to Trey, so I don't know his exact reasoning, but I would guess it's a mixture of what you're talking about and just wanting to go in the league ready. Look, Trey Jones is a really smart kid. Covered him throughout high school, got to know him a little. He's a smart kid. He's an educated kid. I think he probably knows that there's some areas to his game that he's going to need to improve. And look, I don't think Trey Jones just wants to go to the league to be in the league. I think he wants to go in the league, be ready to be in the league, and be a mainstay in the league. So I think more than anything, that the development is the key thing here, Conrad.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is huge for Duke. I mean, they're getting their anchor back as their point guard, not only as just being a facilitator, and I think he's going to be much more of a scorer next year as being a sophomore coming in, but he is one of the best on-ball defenders in the country.
Oh, and he's terrific.
Yeah, and now another guy that they went against, and this will be the last guy I asked you about going into the NBA draft. What are you hearing anything about Cassius Winston possibly putting his name in the early draft portal?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's possible. Look, Cassius Winston has had a tremendous basketball season. This is a guy that I think is actually the best. I think he was the best point guard in all of college basketball. Now, I think that he is a tremendous college basketball player. I think that he can find – I think he'll at the least be a backup in the NBA. But I haven't heard much about him possibly leaving. I think that I wouldn't be surprised and would expect that he's back at Michigan State next year. Conrad, man, it was fun. I really appreciate you jumping on the podcast. As always, it's been a fun college basketball season. I appreciate your insight. I appreciate you jumping on here.
Yeah, man, no problem. Anytime. 2019, man, one for the books.
No question.
This is Tom Izzo.
Michigan State is headed
to the Final Four.
And you can leave it to Cleve.
And he's running hot onto the floor.
He has reinstated the magic at Michigan State.
You're listening to The Sidelines with Evan Daniels.
Before I let you guys go, I want to make sure that you are subscribed and supporting The Sidelines podcast. The best way to do that is to go to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me. Leave a rating. Leave a review. We'd love a 5-star rating, actually. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter. The handle is at Evan Daniels. The same for Instagram. As always, thanks for listening and have a great week.